You're listening to the Fargo Podcast with Jeremiah and Mike.
Oh, yeah?
A podcast dedicated to the FX television show Fargo.
He says, is this what you want?
I think that, sir, is the sound of opportunity knocking.
So put that ice scraper down and enjoy the show.
There you go, now you see it. The inescapable reality. You're trapped.
Welcome back, everyone, to Fargo with Jeremiah and Mike. My name is Jeremiah.
My name is Mike.
What is up, Mike? How are you, my friend?
I'm doing well. A little bit of behind-the-scenes info for our listeners. I am remote. I am on the road this weekend, so apologies in advance if our connection means that my voice is absurd, or should I say obscured.
I don't know what the proper saying is, but I think you sound just fine, my friend. You're coming through clear.
No more absurd than I usually do.
Sure, exactly. So, of course, this, of course, leaves up for our reasoning for a little bit later recording than we normally do. Mike is, of course, like on the road, and just some things didn't work out very well. But here we are on a Saturday recording our thoughts about this episode number 5, The House of Special Purpose. We're midway through, Mike. We're halfway through the season.
Can you believe that? I mean, I guess we can sort of use this as a point to parse out our thoughts on the season overall. I do feel like, again, this was sort of like a moving the chess pieces episode, but something like the last scene really captivated me, and it sort of set up this very interesting climactic moment for what's to come in the second half in terms of these forces really converging together. I mean, I'll repeat sort of what we've been saying over the course of these past 5 podcasts. I've been really enjoying this season, but what I'm hopeful for now is that with this beating of Nikki and the subsequent fallout that I'm assuming is going to happen, things are really going to get kicked into a higher gear from here on out.
I think so too. That's kind of how my feeling was about it. And we always know that this mid part of a season of Fargo is usually typically that way. There's a lot of setup. We're really trying to get ourselves to a position where things are going to start really heating up, and that's where we're going at this moment. Obviously, there's going to be probably lots of drama following this fallout from Nikki's beating, and I think things, especially between the brothers, is going to get pretty nasty, is what I'm expecting or hoping for sure. And I think that's where we're heading towards. And you're right; it's definitely a setup episode, but it was still very entertaining. Lots of interesting scenes for me and you to chew over a little bit. And but it was entertaining television, which is always great. But I think things are going to get very exciting here soon.
Absolutely. What do you make of? It seems that this season in particular is very heavy with this theme of truth and post-truth and your truth versus my truth. And I mean, it was pretty heavy-handed in this episode in particular. Do you find that this is a recurring theme throughout the series of Fargo, or do you feel like this is very prevalent in this season in particular?
I always kind of felt like this is an overall nod to the theme of the entire series as a whole, because I really feel like that, the crust of that topic, right, of truth, what is truth? You know, and I know we talked a lot about it last week because one of VM's henchmen, Yurik or whatever his name is, he, of course, you know, had this discussion about that when talking about Putin. And I like this because this really does kind of sum up a lot about what Fargo a lot of times is that what exactly is the truth? We're getting down to what really is the truth because, you know, depending on who you ask, you know, they're going to have their own version of what the truth is. And I feel, to me, it does kind of represent the show as a whole for every season. But what about you? Do you feel like it's more drawn towards this season more than anything? I mean, obviously they've hit it pretty hard, and it's been in our face a lot.
Yeah, it hit so hard that we're left looking like Nikki by the end of it, curled up in a bathtub as we podcast this.
Ooh, that was painful. No,
I totally agree with you. I feel like, and I want to preface this by saying that I don't think it's a bad thing, but I think it's a noticeable thing. I agree that I think there is a larger theme throughout the 3 seasons of Fargo. You know, that's why the pretext to each and every episode is this is a true story, and then the true fades out to say this is a story. I do agree that it's been a prevalent theme throughout the 2.5 seasons that we've seen so far of the show, but this season in particular feels very... it was really hitting it on the nose. And I wonder if that's also the timeliness that this takes place in. I don't want to get too much into current events, but, you know, even in like the closer look stuff that Noah Hawley talks about after the episodes, he sort of speaks about this idea that, you know, they filmed this in the late 2016, beginning of 2017 period where, you know, we sort of exist now in a quote unquote post-truth society where there's constant questions about what's fake news, what are the best sources to trust, you know, why should my truth be any less validated than your truth? And so I do feel like these are very prevalent themes today, but maybe almost as a result of its recurring commonalities, the third season finds a need to be able to really reinforce these themes over and over and over again.
Yeah, exactly. And you're right. You definitely are taking advantage of the current situation and the timeliness of everything. So something to think about. I mean, it's definitely there, and it's definitely something they want us as an audience to pay attention to, for sure. And I'm okay with it because it does fit very well with what the show is about, really. So
yeah, I'll just be intrigued to see moving forward. Especially this episode got a lot of mention in terms of this truth theme. So we'll see, especially as the action starts to ramp up, as we previously spoke about. Are they going to focus on that and maybe less of the thematic stuff? Who's to say? But as of right now, I think we really have our big theme of the season outlined in bold and underlined several times.
I totally agree. One of the things that they've also kind of hit a lot on is talking about, we call them empires, you call them, you know, different time frames of different major powers that have been in play. And then, of course, in this particular season, we're touching a lot, of course, on Russia. The House of Special Purpose, for a lot of people who didn't know, actually has some other meanings to it, Russian ties to this, of course, because that was the merchant's house of the former Emperor Nicholas II of Russia, where his family, Mike, was murdered or executed in this merchant's house during the following of the Bolshevik Revolution. And so there are more Russian ties. I don't know the significance for Russia. I mean, obviously, we have characters, of course, that are from Russia there, so there's just some ties. But I like this overall thing about, of course, talking about, you know, the rise and fall. You know, I mean, the rise of Russia, the fall of Russia. I mean, we've had many great empires that have risen and fallen. And it kind of ties in a lot to maybe the rise and fall of the Stussies, maybe, right? I mean, it's because that's exactly what we're heading towards here. This is not going to go well for our good man. Should we call him good man? No, he's probably not a good man. This is the rise and fall of Emmett Stussy's empire, I think, is going to crumble very quickly here, as he is so focused on his own personal things and his feud between his brother and being really, I think, naive to the fact that he is in real trouble here with his involvement with the embargo, and this is just not going to go well for him at all, right?
Absolutely. I do feel like Emmett's house really is this eponymous house of special purpose, in that his family isn't necessarily executed, but we see in the first 5 minutes of this episode, they vacate the premises, and so they're basically ghosts in a way, with Emmett kind of just shuffling about, remembering things that his family left behind, the imprints it left onto his life. So yeah, we're starting to really see the impact that Varga's intrusions are really leaving on his life in particular. And we see at the end of the episode the implications that it has on Ray's life as well. But yeah, I would definitely say that the title might more so apply to Emmett than Ray in terms of the Stussy brother equation.
I think so. Definitely so. You know, it's just one of the things. But you're right. The fall of Emmett is going to affect, you know, Ray just as much. And I'm sure we're going to see that play out here as the season goes on.
Mm-hmm.
So let's dig into this. I definitely do have questions about a lot of things that happened in this episode. We do begin with the episode as we hear It's a Hard to Be Humble, played by Mac Davis. And we get to see that there is a special yellow envelope waiting on the foots of the steps of the Stussy home with it says this big bold letters that is for Emmett's eyes only. And of course, unfortunately for Emmett, his wife Stella is the one that finds this envelope, and she can't help herself. She has to know what in the world is in an envelope that says for your eyes only? I mean, is this just the stupidity of Ray and Nikki to not really think this thing through? Like, maybe just having a regularly, you know, marked envelope that doesn't scream something that's pretty private is in here. I mean, this is pretty stupid, right?
Yeah, I mean, but I think this is also the folly and one of the fun things we enjoy about not only the Fargo TV verse, but also how it applies to the movie itself. Is this idea of regular people trying to get their head into the very brainy criminal circuit and fail as a result. I mean, look at last season. That's what Peggy really tried to do, and it resulted in the death of her husband. And you feel it here where Ray and Nikki, when Sai confronts Nikki later, I believe, Nikki doesn't even realize the fact that Stella could have not only found the envelope, but decided to sneak a peek into it. So, you know, I think this is just a great representation of the fact that these people are in over their head on all sides of the spectrum.
They certainly are. Absolutely. Yeah, because, you know, unfortunately, yeah, the fallout is that Stella opens this letter, this envelope up, finds it basically ransom-type note style, you know, but basically it was a blackmail with this DVD where we get to see that Ray just dresses up again as Emmett. And this time, of course, they film him and Nikki having sex to frame up, you know, Emmett having an affair, and it was saying that they would not tell his wife if they give him $100,000. Now, are they reaching here? I mean, is this a little bit much? Do you think Ray obviously is concerned that that they were asking for too much. Nikki, of course, wants more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but, she's going to mention later in the episode, she's like, you know, the only reason we're not rich is because of his larceny. And again, going back to what we were talking about last week, I think this episode and this scene in particular where he proposes to her sort of proves or disproves the theory that Nikki is working him over and that she's a criminal through and through. I think she really does care for Ray, but she has such bold, audacious fantasies in her own head, even though she's more grounded than a character like the aforementioned Peggy, that it causes her to, you know, make these huge leaps in logic, like saying, right, oh yeah, we could easily extort $100,000 from your brother. She's going to wind up with, you know, nearly half of that by the end, but maybe she was trying to negotiate as well. Or in negotiation, don't they always say, you know, purposely throw out a high number so that you can, they'll throw out a low one and then you settle on your actual median number that you want to find?
I believe that is what they say you should do. I haven't really tried it myself, Mike, but it makes logical sense. You know, you could go for a high number and hope that you could at least get into a realm that you'd be happy with. So when we do get to see this scene, by the way, with, you mentioned it, about Nikki and Ray and, of course, filming this video, we have this touching moment where Ray, of course, does propose to her. Now, of course, not while wearing that stripper wig, because let's face it, everyone, you do not want to propose to someone who's wearing a stripper's wig, right? That's really... Yeah, faux pas. I mean, I don't think...
They're gonna ask you what your story is, and you're gonna have to...
Right.
You're going to have to come up with something else. I mean, it's probably not the best to say, hey, we proposed right before I made this fake video to extort my brother for stealing a stamp from me so many odd years ago. But let's be honest, I'm pretty sure that they're not going to have a story by the end of it. Or if they will, the story is going to be, well, I proposed and one of us died.
Well, that's a good point. But I don't know, you know, the more I think about it, this could be a fun story to tell the grandkids. I mean, I'm just saying, you know, but I get where she's coming from. But the main, and all jokes aside, that I wanted to ask you is that, you know, when he proposes his love to her, she, of course, never returns with the, well, I love you. She just kept saying, you're sweet. In fact, she says it multiple times. She says it another time when, of course, she gets the phone call from Sai and asks about having this meetup. And, of course, she mysteriously does not tell him about it. And just when he, you know, says, well, why don't I go with you? She just says, oh, you're sweet, and then leaves anyway. So I think, is it just me? We have talked a little bit about this, like, what is her full intentions? You know, does she really love Ray? Is this love, or is she just using him? I mean, to me, after this episode, I am very, very convinced that this girl is, for the most part, just using him, although I think she does have feelings for him, but more importantly for her is to make sure she comes out ahead from this whole thing. What do you think? Is she fully using him? I mean, does this episode push that theories along further for you, or how do you feel about this still?
How do you define coming out ahead? Do you mean her making money? Do you mean her becoming a good bridge player?
That's a good question. I think she's okay. Let's think about the kind of person she is. I mean, she's a girl. I'm assuming she's probably always been from the Midwest. I don't know how much more details we have of her background. You know, she's been in and out of trouble her whole life. She's kind of a bad girl in a way. You know, she's never lived a goody two shoes life, I don't think. So she's always kind of had to work. You know, she's probably always had a rough, shall we say, right? I think at this point in her life, even though she's still pretty young, I think she kind of would like to just have the means of doing whatever she wants. You know, she wants the money. She wants to be able to have money. And if it means staying with Ray, that's fine. But, I mean, I was going to talk more about it when we get to it. But I get this feeling that if she would have gotten money before the VM's men beat the living daylights out of her, if she would have gotten money, I do get this feeling she would have drove away and left forever and left Ray.
Mm.
But that's just the feeling I got from her. But maybe I'm reading her really wrong.
I don't know. I mean, I think it's a bold take. I don't necessarily think it's a wrong take, because obviously we can't see that far ahead to see what's going to happen. This might be the optimist or romantic in me, but I don't know. Something tells me that she really does have feelings for him. I think if she did get that $50,000, I think she would go back to Ray and say, okay, I think she'd leave, but I think she'd leave with him. She would do, you know, what she was kind of doing mm-hmm. with the quickness after Maurice got hit with the air conditioner at the end of the premiere, her saying like, okay, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, we're going to take off and get out of here. And so I feel like Ray is with her no matter what. I do think it is an interesting okay. sticking point, as you point out, that, you know, he says, I love you. She says, I don't. Obviously, that is a little bit of a trouble point in any sort of relationship, no matter what the circumstances yeah. May be behind it. But maybe she just has an interesting way of expressing her own feelings. I'm not entirely sure. But I am personally on the side that Nikki is not using Ray. Or maybe she might be utilizing his connections, but she's not, you know, working him over as a sap and then would just abandon him at a moment's notice.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I mean, and that's very, very possible. I mean, there is times where I watch them together where I do feel like she definitely has, like I said, some strong feelings for him. So we'll see how this plays out. I mean, obviously, this depends on whether or not the two of them survive this story, which is not mm-hmm. looking very promising, at least for one, if not both of them. I mean, time will tell, but I will be very surprised to see how things go for him. But boy, Emmett finds out Stella knows about this video. Obviously, that was a heartbreaking thing. Poor Emmett. He's, you know, he truly, you know, I was wondering about, well, how does he feel about his wife? But, you know, I think it's pretty clear how upset he got in seeing the aftermath of her leaving him after seeing this video. I mean, he definitely is pretty crushed about this whole thing. He really obviously loves Stella and mm-hmm. is extremely upset that she no longer wants to be part of his life because of this. Very hard to watch that, but yeah, Emmett's in a bad place at the moment, isn't he?
And I think if the naming convention of Emmett's wife, I feel like if it only was for this one moment where he yells Stella as his family drives away, it's totally worth it. Any sort of random reference to a streetcar named Desire is a plus in my book.
Did they purposely? So it makes you think. I mean, that was from the very beginning. They decided to go with the name Stella just for this one scene, right?
you could imagine. I'm not sure if this is a long con in order to just pay off in this one quick pun. I'm personally all for it. You go, Noah Hawley. If not, it's just a fantastic coincidence.
Right. Well, it may be one of those things where they decided when they were working out all the characters' names and he came up with Stella. Maybe, you know, at first it was just some... he had another reason for going with the name, but then when this scene started working itself out on the writing room floor, he decided, well, I've got to have him say Stella in such a way, right? So I wonder if one of those things that came afterwards, but it was a great moment for sure. But the big question is now, who is having a harder day? Is it Emmett finding out that his brother is impersonating him again and making a sex tape to cause his family to leave him? Or would it be Cy arriving back at the office to find VM there and having the most, I would say probably one of the most disturbing things that maybe could ever happen to anyone outside of, you know, maybe being another way of being tortured. But holy cow, this scene, Mike, in the office, I have to admit, it's the closest I've ever come to maybe throwing up a little bit while watching.
Wow.
I mean, it was pretty intense, right? I mean, okay, I'll tell you what it was the shot. When they start to slowly see the cup come up to his mouth, I was just like, you know, I kind of took a little gag there for a second because I just, you try to imagine, like, could you, the horror would be is if you were in this position, like if I was in Sai's position to being forced to do something like this, it's like, I almost think I would have just throw my arms or something in the air and knock that cup out of that guy's hand or something. And granted, it were they going to shoot me? I think I'd almost rather take the risk that they were going to shoot me afterwards than have to go through that. But Sai, he takes it like a man, I suppose, and he does drink the cup. And of course, you know, in the end, it leads to them basically really putting him in his new position, which is you're just to do what you're told, which we kind of knew was really leading towards here. But how was your feeling about this breakdown of poor Sai and this very dramatic scene of them drinking, having him drink Mr. VM's pee?
Yeah, I was trying to think before we came on of really who had the worst day between all four of these characters. But it really does feel like Sai had the most eventful day in that he has this. He's going to have the meeting with the widow Goldfarb. He's going to essentially be cut out as the second in command with Stussy Parking Lots. So this is actually a pretty big Sai episode, which I'm happy about. I have fallen in love with this character ever since episode two when he tried to be all badass and clip Ray out only for him to clip his car quite literally as well as someone else's. But this is an interesting one because first off, we had this big Varga scene to finish off the previous episode, and it does feel like Varga is such a big, blustery, gregarious personality that sometimes I feel like Holly sort of saves him for the last, you know, a little bit of afterburner to put in the episode to really put it into overdrive. But this really comes in like the third scene of the episode, and he's still doing his Varga thing, talking about, you know, how fat his wife is. He's thrown out anti-Semitic references. I'm not entirely sure if he feels that way or if he's trying
to...
well, do you think he feels that way or do you think he's preying upon biases that, like, he believes for some reason that Emmett and Sai might have? I'm not entirely sure. There might be something in that, but he could possibly have it as well.
Let me rephrase this. I do think the guy is anti-Semitic. I mean, that's for sure. But I see what you're saying. I do, you know, you're right. I think he is really trying to really aggravate and break Sai by saying these things. That's actually a very good point. I mean, when you call someone's, I would think that Varga is a smart enough guy to know that when you start off by saying that, you know, insulting your wife as being fat, that you know you're going to get a certain response from that person, and that is what he was looking for. So no, you're right. This was all on, everything was calculated purposely on what he says. This VM is not the kind of guy who does it. He thinks through everything he's going to say. Everything is with a purpose is when it comes to his dialogue. So yeah, he did plan this out. I mean, but it's no surprise he's anti-Semitic because obviously this is a very bad man. This is not a good guy. So no surprise there. But I see what you're saying. Yeah, I do think it was all on purpose.
But he still does the Varga trademark. He's almost like a salesman in this perspective, in that, like, a la Harold Hill and the Music Man, he's really snowing over some of these guys by, you know, talking about, hey, you know what, Sai, it's all a matter of perspective. You know, a chicken is an egg's way of making another egg. it's these idioms that really are really skin deep, but for some reason, the way Varga says them, they have this inner resonance for some reason with these characters. And then obviously you have one of the biggest shows of dominance that we have ever seen in the Fargoverse. I wouldn't say I was grossed out about it. I am more so grossed out by moments of things like body horror or gore or blood that showed on television. This definitely was not that. But, I mean, I would be pretty disgusted if I was in Sai's position as well. But
oh, I'd hope so.
Yeah, I think... hopefully. I'm hopefully not that depraved or absurd or obscured. But I feel like this was a great scene as well to just sort of show Sai and representative of how far Sai is going to fall in terms of the power structure of Stussy, where, you know, he's being forced to, not only does he learn in this scene that Varga is the new partner, but now he has to drink the waste of the person that has now surpassed him as partner of the company. So, and I think with this involvement of the IRS, something tells me that Sai is now only a partner on paper, but in being only a partner on paper, if there's any sort of fiduciary difficulties, he's going to take the brunt of it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And we knew that things were going to lead to this. I mean, there's this, the wondering about the separation. I mean, I personally think, regardless, he wants him out of the way. I said this last week. I mean, if he is not the first to go of our big characters, I will be really surprised. In fact, at this point now, I will be surprised if he makes it through the next episode for sure.
So, ooh, okay.
I mean, I know that's the Jeremiah hot take, I suppose you said. We haven't come up with a name for anything crazy I say. But yeah, it's kind of where I'm leaning towards. I really would be surprised if he makes it through the next season. And I do want to ask you this, though. Is there any other real reference? Because we've talked about this after, I think, the second episode. I mean, more discussion about pee. I mean, we had the opening scene with the poor man who's peeing because he's so upset about the situation he's in, all the way up to, of course, the scene where we get to see a day in the life of Rhea Stussy. And of course, now we have this scene with, you know, Sai being forced to drink the hymns pee. A lot of pee talk. I mean, we've had, this is the most pee talk I've ever had in any podcast of covering any show, Mike, in my entire life. I don't know about you.
Yes, we have not covered the R. Kelly tapes yet, but yes, this is definitely the most I've definitely talked about, but that hopefully makes us the number one Fargo podcast out there for more reasons than one.
I think so. We're willing to dig into all of the pee discussion, no matter how far it takes us.
That should really be your new intro now.
Should that be the new intro? Okay, we could add that.
Yes, just, no, instead of the fantastic music that you made a couple weeks ago, just have it be one steady sound of someone going to the bathroom, and that'll be a perfect way to welcome people into this podcast.
that's the whole opening, just the sound of being. That's perfect. I like it. Let's do that.
Listeners, let us know what you think about that.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure we get all kinds of great response from this one, this idea. Well, let's talk about now Sai after this dramatic scene. Of course, he tries to get a hold of Emmett, but as we all know, Emmett is very distraught at the moment and is unable to talk. But we do see that Sai goes to a meeting with this Miss Goldfarb, which we heard them very briefly mention this person who is interested in buying out the business. And they meet up in a place called Bear's Den, which, by the way, I have been told there really is no such place really in Minnesota. So that is all fictional, which I loved it with all the bears and there was lots of bears all over the whole place. It was very elegant dining room, I thought, for the most part. It did seem very out of place for that particular part of the world. But so they have this meeting, he has this meeting with Miss Goldfarb. You could tell he's very, very upset at the moment, which, of course, this Miss Goldberg is played by Mary McDonald. So they have this very serious meeting about, you know, she is, of course, interested in buying the place. Her and her late husband, of course, made it big in the storage business and now wants a stake in the parking lot business. She'd be willing to buy partials of their lots, but would really like to take it all over because, let's face it, you really don't want to go and have a Goldfarb as a enemy, is what she was clearly mentioning. So what do we take about this meeting? I mean, obviously for Sai, this is a desperation to get them out of the business completely and let this be her problem now. Let VM be her problem now. Anything else that you could come out of this meeting? What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think this totally shows the naivete on behalf of Sai. I mean, considering what Varga had been doing in order to really track everything that had been happening with these two guys, you would definitely have to be born yesterday to really think, oh yeah, if I sign my rights away of the company to this woman, they're not going to bother me again. That's totally what's going to happen, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, Sai has this really interesting quote during the conversation where he says he feels like he's left the known world. And I think this is sort of one reason why he also reaches out to the Widow Goldfarb is he's sort of grasping for his own reality or his prior reality, where prior to Varga coming in, he had this, he was really one of the biggest kings in Minnesota, and he had his, you know, he had his wife, he has his partner, he really has this fantastic life. And then someone comes in and really just shakes up the snow globe and causes him to really see reality a different way. We spoke about it a few times in the past couple of episodes about this idea that this setting is almost encapsulated in a certain set of time where it feels like the rest of the world is existing on a much less naive and much more technologically advanced plane. And this is another representation of that, where Sai's like, I, you know, essentially, this is not the world that I know anymore. And this is really a last ditch opportunity for him to say, okay, if I know one thing, I know the Widow Goldfarb, I know this is something that will work for us. And when it turns out that, you know, it turns out to be, I don't think this deal is really going to be anything. If it does, I'm sure the Widow Goldfarb will not be long for this world, unfortunately. But this is clearly Sai's last attempt to try to go back to some sort of status quo.
Yeah, that's very good, and you make a great point that this, if this goes any further, this could be very bad news for her, because this is definitely something that VM is not going to want to have happen whatsoever. So I do wonder if this will be the only time we see her, but I get this feeling that you know, Sai might continue this conversation and try to move it in that direction, even though it would not be wise for him to do so, I think. So it could wind up actually having, again, maybe this is the main reason to go ahead and knock him out of the way, because he's still pushing this further than he needs to. But we'll see how that plays out for them. But I'm just very disappointed that this Bear's Den is not a real place, because I was really looking forward to having lunch there. Maybe with you, Mike. I mean, if we ever wind up in Minnesota together.
So fantastically decorated. I know that Fargo also shoots, I believe it shoots in Canada as well. So for all we know, it could be this lavish Canadian restaurant that got a little bit of a makeover to just say the Bear's Den. But we're going to have to target wherever that place is and try to form a tete-a-tete to sit down there and talk some Fargo.
Do you think you could see someone from the second season eating at the Bear's Den, perhaps?
Yes, I think the body of Bear Gerhardt after he got killed after being distracted by aliens is prominently displayed on the wall.
Yes, I that's what I was hoping you picked up, but yeah, I think that's exactly right. So, but yeah, so unfortunately, yeah, we will not be eating there, Mike. Unfortunately, if we ever go to the Minnesota area, it's not a place. Unfortunately, oh well.
Aww.
So let's talk about this meeting that, of course, Emmett gets the text message from Emmett that he wants to see him. And like I said earlier, we really get to really see this breakdown. You know, Emmett is really obviously very upset. He's blaming Sai because Sai wanted him to get rid of the Ray problem. But as we all know that, you know, as much as Sai would like to be Mr. Badass, even if the shackles were released at any point, I don't think we would, you know, that there would be much different scenario than we have now. We all know that Sai is not really capable of really roughing up someone enough to the where they would have changed their mind. I mean, we know this about Sai. I mean, God bless him, but he's just not that guy. But, you know, Emmett's very upset about this, but he does agree to have him try to still fix the situation and gives him full rein to do whatever he wants to do. But, you know, we know this isn't going to go well. But I don't know. So where are we going? I mean, there's a lot of discussion about this, about the Emmett and Sai relationship. I've kind of already thrown my stamp in there. I know that our good friend Brendan Fitzpatrick exactly wants to know what Varga's end game in putting a wedge between Sai and Emmett. What do you think? It's important, I think, for VM to have these two, though, continue to have issues, because that way it's much easier for him, for VM, to get Sai completely out of the way, right?
Yeah, I'm of two minds with this, because I totally agree with you. On one hand, it would make sense from a strategic perspective for Varga to say, the more these two fight and distract each other, the more that, you know, he fights with Ray, the more ability that I have to be able to do what I need to without anyone really noticing me. But then on the other hand, you have this strategy that maybe Varga's trying to implement of just closing out Sai so that he can become Emmett's lone confidant. I mean, Sai has also proved himself, from their perspective, not really to be trusted. I don't think we talked about this, but I think one of the reasons why Varga and his men targeted Sai so vociferously in the beginning is because during that scene last week when Sai was talking to Winnie in his office, the henchmen interpreted it as him talking to the cops and possibly ratting them out. Mm-hmm. So, you know, from a double perspective of Sai is a threat to my position / Sai might end up selling us down the river.
Right.
He really wants to be the lone voice in Emmett's ear.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, you know, when you really think about the two characters, I mean, if I'm VM, definitely to me, Emmett seems, it's very clear the Stussy brothers are very easily manipulated. And Sai, on the other hand, even though the guy's not the brightest, you know, person you'll ever meet, but he is way more skeptical, and he is definitely going to be the one that's a little harder to get on board. So, you know, he's the one you do have to really control the most. So a lot of this makes a lot of sense, but I do think that it's going to be, again, like I said, much easier, of course, once Sai is completely out of the way, which is where I think we're headed. But, this is really Emmett. This is Sai's last shot, I feel, of being a badass. And of course, as we see at the very end of the episode, he fails in that dramatically because, let's face it, until those guys jump in, I mean, Sai's not going to do anything. He's not roughing up Nikki. I mean, he's just not in his nature.
No, that's what, like, I don't think. I mean, we can talk later about whether or not how much the henchmen knew about Sai's plan to begin with, but it seemed like Sai unshackled in a way, Sai unchained, was for him to just offer Nikki money and hope that she'd go away, which again is not clearly the others have a different way of doing things, but he hopes that, you know, he doesn't need to bruise his knuckles whatsoever. He's going to reach into his pocketbook instead.
Yeah. No, exactly. And it made sense, though, that is the direction he was going with when it comes to how can I get rid of these guys. And I mean, he's smart enough to know that, you know, money talks, and especially with Nikki, you know. So, and we can definitely talk a little bit more about this, but yeah. So, you know, Emmett, of course, releases Sai from his shackles, and it's not until this moment we finally get to see Mike in the episode where what's going on with Gloria and Winnie. Of course, we see the two of them going through the whole scenario with this very clueless Dottie, who is. That's really the best. Actually, that's the best adjective I come up with. This poor guy. The only thing he could come out of this after the whole conversation is, well, you know, the chief's not going to like this.
Yeah, and I love a nice when we had Gloria pull into the station in the first episode. We saw that the station is being sharing space with a public library, and so again, I love a reference to that. With as they're sort of explaining to him this gruesome murder or possible double murder, we have this father and his two kids like checking out a book in the children's section. I think it's just a really fantastic set of imagery that really calls back to Fargo's dark comedic base.
Yeah, that's actually a really good point. It does, and that's what, you know, those things are things that I really like about the show. So it was great stuff, but. Yeah, great, great moment. Now, next we do have this moment. I know we talked a little bit about some of this, but, you know, Ray, of course, is getting fixed for a tuxedo. And we see him and Nikki are in there. They're texting to see. One of the things I thought was interesting is that Nikki right away said that he needs something bigger. He needs to feel more comfortable. I don't know if there was any meaning to that. I mean, is that her way of saying, yeah, that's too tight for you? I mean, I was kind of thought that was kind of interesting because it really made it highlight the fact that she thought that the first tuxedo, which I thought looked fine on him, but that he needed to go bigger. Was it too tight? Is that what it was?
It could be just represent. I mean, it could be too tight. It could be her trying to make a subtle reference to maybe Ray's has been put on a little weight. I mean, she did make a reference when they were making the video of,
that's
hide
right.
Your gut. But I think, again, if we're going digging a little bit deeper into this, it might be also representative, as we talked about before, the fact that Nikki seems like she is always striving for something bigger. We talked before about how, you know, she throws out the number of 100 grand for this first attempted blackmail. So maybe it's just, again, Nikki's sort of MO of go big or go home.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. You know, she then gets the phone call from Sai, which was a very fun conversation to hear them talk, because he's almost like you could tell he was like really hoping to say, listen, your plan failed. You guys need to knock this off, kind of thing. But obviously she pushes back and she's like, well, listen, here's the thing. And then we, of course, jump right into our conversation about truth. You know, I say, well, who's to say, you know, what is truth? I mean, I'll tell you what we'll do is now you give us $200,000 and we'll basically let Stella know what the truth is. I mean, this is definitely her playing hardball, like you said. She's going, she's shooting for the stars. She wants as much as she can get out of this whole deal. And of course, she does not tell Ray at all about this. And I know we talked about this, but I really do think that this is more questions to exactly her full intentions of what she would do with any kind of significant money if she got it. But we'll find out for sure. What else? Is there anything else that you got from this scene that we should talk about?
I mean, it is interesting. I know you pointed out the Nikki side of the equation, but Cy as well, and this harkens back to the previous scene we saw where he's like, I'll take care of it. But Cy also does not communicate this information to Emmett. And it's interesting if we're going back to this idea of the two dueling brothers and their respective seconds. The seconds are having their conversation together, and we're about to see the brothers have their conversation together, completely independent of each other.
Yeah, that's actually very true. And it was an intense conversation between the two of them, dropping multiple F-bombs, by the way, which that's something you don't always hear necessarily, even on a cable show. But it was quite comical. I thought it was extremely funny, now, of course, when he hangs up and says, oh, that was Mom.
Now, I've watched this through like the FX Now on the FX website. I don't know if you watched it on TV, but if you did they put all the F-bombs in there? Or because I know sometimes like in Breaking Bad, for example, they'll bleep it out. But I know that it depends on the cable show how many times they'll decide to let the FCC come after them.
Yeah, no, I think they dropped at least three. That was how many did you count?
Yeah, it was at least three. And they were... Ray seemed to be the more profane one, but Emmett was definitely proved that they are, you know, part of the same branch of the family tree. But like you said, again, a really nice comedic turn at the end where Ray realizes that he's basically been screaming at his brother, dropping all sorts of profane words on a public bus, and just sort of plays off and being like, oh yeah, that's my mom. Which, again, just a really funny way to cap off the scene.
Yeah, especially since it's with the week of Mother's Day, too. I don't know if that was
exactly.
Perfect timing.
Happy Mother's Day.
Yeah, happy Mother's Day, Mom. I just implicate you into some very intense conversations that you would expect, hopefully a son and a mother is not having these conversations, you would think. But, wow. the looks on the faces, too. Of course, everybody in the bus was pretty funny as well. So,
yeah, I thought Ray was going to get kicked off the bus. I thought I heard a noise that the bus was going to stop and throw him off. But no, it seemed like the bus driver was relatively okay with that. I mean, living in New York City, I've heard people say similar things, if not worse things, on public transit and not get kicked off. So I guess no matter where you are, it's always kind of one and the same in terms of that mentality.
Yeah. Well, by the way, speaking of, we were talking about Cy's character. Was there any meaning, by the way, when Cy has this conversation with Nikki and says, well, I'm not the, and I couldn't, with his accent, it's so hard, but I'm not sure how to pronounce this prime minister of Israel, but I know his last name's Bing, and was there any reference to, what do you think about that? Him kind of like always referring to himself as being a former prime minister of Israel. I mean, I thought that was kind of interesting for him to drop that name. It was just like kind of like, I was like, what did he say? I had to go back and listen to it, and I couldn't quite make out, you know, how to do it. And unfortunately, I don't want to pronounce his name incorrectly, but, you know, he was a former prime minister of Israel for a long time. And I just thought it was kind of interesting that was a name they threw out. I don't know if just that he kind of, if that's just someone that's important to him, perhaps, maybe? I don't know. I thought it was kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. You know, it's one of these things that the writers, they throw these little things in there, different names and stuff, and it makes you wonder, like, what exactly could be the meaning for that particular character and why they would, that is a name that's something. I mean, let's be honest, no offense to Nikki, but I am pretty sure that Nikki doesn't know any of the names of any of the prime ministers that ever ruled Israel at any point. I mean, it just he doesn't strike me as someone who would know what that was. I mean, he didn't throw out some random celebrity name that everyone and their brother knows. You know, he didn't, you know what I'm saying?
But I didn't get the reference at first either. Maybe that just makes me a bad Jew. I'm glad
that
you caught
it, Mike.
And I agree. His accent was pretty thick as well, that it didn't exactly make it that discernible. But
yeah,
again,
right.
If we're deeper into this, obviously his religion has been called out earlier on in this episode, but also this idea of Israel and Palestine, which are two neighboring countries that are essentially fighting over the same tract of land due to extremely different beliefs to the point of violence against each of their respective countries. I feel like this could be very representative of what's going on here as well, where, you know, Ray and Emmett are, for all intents and purposes, sort of occupying the same space. They're fighting over this one stamp or the principle of the stamp by the end of it. But there's going to be some very bloody consequences.
Yeah, I just kind of wonder where Des was going to as well, because that's exactly what you think about, of course, when you think about the conflict between the, you know, the Palestinians and the in Israel. I mean, that's where I was going with as well, and it could just be that's just the reference. I don't know if just that's where they were going with that. They wanted to throw that in there for us, you know, people who, of course, overanalyze every little thing, and of course, is immediately looking up. Oh, who is that? You know, I mean, it's one of those things that it does tie in very nicely to some of these other things we've had. So yeah, this I think that's really where it works best. But just thought it was worth mentioning in there. So, but yeah, Ray gets home, by the way, and finds Winnie and Gloria waiting for him to question him about again what's going on with this whole. They're trying to break down this story, obviously. They have a pretty good idea at this point, of course, what had happened. But now they're really trying to push Ray and just getting more information from him. I don't know. How do you think – let's talk about – how do you think Ray handled himself? I mean, I thought for Ray, I thought even though he really fubbed it, you know, pretty bad, I mean, he really kind of messed up, you know, as we expected. But not terribly. Like, it could have gone a lot worse. Don't you think? Like, he could have really – done terrible. I mean, he still didn't give too much away. I mean, the ladies, obviously, they're not stupid. They know he's lying. But I don't know. I think it could have gone worse. What do you think?
Yeah, I would definitely. I mean, it can always go worse. And I thought he had this nice sort of like card in his pocket talking about like, I got fired to explore, you know, helping people in a greater lawyer capacity. Granted, he has nothing to back that up. But it's really interesting comparing this scene with what we talked about last week when he impersonates Emmett and goes into the bank, which will have ramifications later on in this episode. But there's that like one split second when he really settles into that Emmett characterization and you start to realize that they're maybe not too different after all in terms of temperament. And we got it again here because he lies about his relationship with Emmett by saying that like, oh, I was the best man at his daughter's wedding, which would be weird to begin with. No offense to people who had their uncle as the you know, as one of the people in their wedding party back, you know, when they happened to get married. But that sounds a little off the wall to me. He completely copies Emmett's story from the first episode.
Yeah,
about, you know, oh, yeah, no shoes at a wedding. How crazy is that? And it's clear that I think as much as we were sort of saying like, oh, Ray is the, you know, the hangdog innocent guy who's going to get dragged in as an unfortunate circumstance of all of this. I think he's capable of more than we initially thought.
I think so, too. This is the growth. I think we talked a little bit about it last episode when he was impersonating Emmett to go to the, you know, to the bank to get the money, right? I saw some growth there and like something kind of is changing with him as far as his confidence and how he presents himself and what he does to get him in and out of situations. So I thought overall he handled himself very well. And I think this is a good point, good timing, Mike, for me to maybe throw out a crazy theory I had for this. What if the way the Ray dies is that someone, and it could be even, this would be brilliant if it was Nikki, let's say Nikki is fed up and she's going to take care of Emmett herself and wants to have him killed and didn't realize that and somehow mistakes Ray for Emmett. And Ray dies because he has taken on the Emmett's role at some point. We had a lot of this of him, you know, interpreting his brother. What if he gets killed as being Emmett instead of Ray?
I would love that. I mean, it's akin, not exactly a one for one comparison, but it's much like in Hamlet when I believe Hamlet thinks that Claudius, his uncle, is hiding behind a curtain, and he stabs him to death, and turns out to be the quite innocent Polonius, a very similar circumstance in terms of misinterpreting someone, and as a result, it pays with their life. I think this would be a great way, a really poetic way to end things, especially since we keep seeing Ray not only impersonate Emmett in terms of appearance, but it seems like in mood and in terms of, you know, braggadocious attitude as well. So I think that'd be a lot of fun. I don't know if it would be Nikki. I could definitely see if for some reason or another Varga decides this is the moment to take out Emmett, you know, to really supersede him and take over the company for myself. And he sends Yuri or the other guy or Mimo or someone else after him. And it turns out that they accidentally kill Rey instead of him because they think that he's Emmett. It's almost it reminds me as well of in, later on in season one when Lester is dating his former secretary at the travel agency. And he knows that someone is inside, probably going to kill him. So he puts her in his big orange parka and sends her inside, knowing very well that she's going to be mistaken for him, and she gets shot up. So a lot of ideas of mistaken identity. We talked before about the season three opener as well. I think that would be a really fun way to end Rey's character off.
Yeah, and it definitely makes more sense, of course, that would be someone from VM's organization that would be the ones doing the killing. I just want really dark there, that the poor guy would die in the hands of the person he loves. That would be really dark. But it would make more sense that it would be one of those guys that mistakes him from Emmett and he gets killed. Boy, that would be brilliant. So we'll see what happens. We do have a moment next where... Oh, and by the way, well, we shouldn't gloss over the fact that, of course, that they're... Interrogation of Rey, of course, is interrupted by Chief Mo. And no surprise, of course, he is not happy with the situation. He begins to tell this story about the girl with the red balloon, which, by the way, fact-checking, that is actually, from what I understand, a true story, Mike. That is...
How do we know? How do we know? That's the point of the show, Jeremiah. How do we know?
Well, I mean, it's on the internet, Mike, so it's got to be true. But
that's,
no, you're right.
That's the definition of the other truth.
The internet, does the internet have its own version of truth? You know, we heard about the different names for truth, you know, Russian names for truth. There's got to be one for the internet truth, right?
Yeah, I mean, I guess you call it WikiLeaks. Is that the internet's version of truth?
Well, I heard it was checked out through for Scopes, but yeah, sure, Wiki, yeah, absolutely. Everyone knows about the Wiki truth because that is always a special kind of truth when it comes to Wiki, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So Emmett, of course, has another run-in with VM. VM is really, he's not trusting the Jew, as he says. And we knew this conversation was going to come up. And, you know, Emmett, you know, he's quick to, like, come to his defense. Say, listen, you know, Sai's fine. You know, everything's going to be okay. I'll talk to him. This is, of course, again, him trying to establish, you know, who's in control here. It's just more wonderful moments. This character is just so beautifully played by David. And I just think about the importance of, I think I talked about this at the very start of this season, is that how important it is to have an antagonist that you just really enjoy watching. And because he's just so delightfully awful that every time he comes on the screen, I can't wait to see what other crazy thing he's going to say and how he's going to say it in the manner. It's just been great. Anything else that I should be mentioning about this particular moment, or?
No, I think we should, moving forward, have like a Varga metaphor counter or tracker or something. Because this episode we had the chicken metaphor and we have the souffle metaphor here as well. So, you know, Varga is something we've seen. A lot of food, surprising for a bulimic, but that's his... You do you. It seems like he... I mean, this is him clearly working over Emmett, as he has done countless times beforehand. So, you know, I will wonder if one day Emmett might catch wise to all this, but it seems like for now, because Emmett is so affiliated with this idea of wealth over not necessarily having a lot of money, he's buying into it for the time being.
Yeah. No, he is, absolutely. Now, a little bit later on, we get them seen back at the office, and things could be... The sins of Rey here is really now haunting him in another way, when we get a visit from the IRS man, played by Harmish Linklater, which is also in another Holly show, the Legion show, from what I understand. Again, neither one of us are watching that show, but I heard he plays Clark in that particular show. So bringing back another actor that's in the Holly world, shall we say, that
Hollywood.
That's perfect. So what do we think about this scene? I mean, he's questioning about the course. You take $10,000 out. By the way, this is true, by the way, folks. If You don't want to take 10 grand out. It brings a lot of red flags. You could get yourself in some trouble with that. You got to be careful how much you take out. You know, 9,999, you're good to go. 10,000, IRS shows up at your place. They want to look at your books. Things just don't go very well, you know, and now you're having very uncomfortable conversations with your beloved money laundering partner. So, yeah, I mean, I don't think I saw this coming. Did you see this coming, that the IRS was going to be getting involved in this story?
No, I mean, this is, again, my lack of fiduciary knowledge, but I had assumed last episode when they said that something was going to go off, I thought Emmett was going to get a notification. As you know, sometimes on your phone, you might get like a notification from your credit card company being like, hey, just so you know, someone's using your card to make this purchase. Do you approve or decline it? I did not realize that it would trigger a visit from the IRS, but this, I mean, this is going to complicate things infinitely more. And, you know, we get to see Emmett squirm a little bit this episode. It seems like he is clearly taking in the gravity of the situation. It's really funny actually comparing the two, and that Dollard is very much like, yeah, this is like a routine check. He compares it to, like, you know, being pulled aside by TSA at the airport for further review. But Emmett is freaking out because he is looking outside, just like last episode with Sai, at Varga watching. And considering what Varga did to Sai with what he thought Sai did last time, I wonder if Emmett might pay similar or even worse consequences with the thought that he's talking to the IRS about something.
Interesting. I never really thought about that, but yeah. Huh. Okay, well, I guess we'll find out. Yeah, we'll see how this thing...
Yeah, I mean, for right now, Varga seems pretty okay. I mean, as soon as Emmett comes out of his office, Varga's like, oh, no, like, I've cooked the books. I've got a fake ledger prepared to distract him. But I wonder if Emmett might get, quote unquote, punished for, not through actions of his own, for these eyes being drawn in his direction. Though, again, it's interesting looking at this relationship that it seems like Emmett is really blaming Nikki for all of this still, between the tape and the stealing of the money. He's like, oh yeah, no, my brother's okay, despite, you know, the invectives we hurled at each other. Nikki's the real problem here.
Well, yeah, I mean, because I think also too, I mean, Emmett knows the kind of person Ray is, and I think he may also know that Ray's pretty easily manipulated, and I think that he knows in his heart of heart that If Ray's doing this stuff, it's because of her influence. It's got to be because of her. I think this makes sense. If I was him, I think that's what I'd be thinking as well. So I think I like this theory. Like, I've been wondering too, like, does Emmett survive, but he winds up, of course, in jail for the rest of his life? I mean, so I think maybe that's a direction that could happen with him. I mean, he's going to probably lose everything, but maybe he survives it, you know what I mean? So I'm kind of wondering if maybe that's the direction we're going. But I love the look on his face when he goes, we've got fake books? Yes, Emmett, you got what do you think they've been doing behind that locked door back there? I mean, come on. Dude, it's crazy to think that's like, speaking of someone who's so naive, it's like, hello, is there anybody up there, buddy?
I don't know if Emmett's like relieved for now that they have a plan, because he probably thinks it's still going to wind up with him being culpable. But it seems like for now they're doing okay.
Yeah, exactly. I do think that VM's concern is more about how Emmett's going to react out of this more than anything. I mean, when you see him in the office pondering, like, you could tell, like, thinking about how this is going, and to me, that is the most he's thinking is, like, you know, how, what is Emmett going to do from this? What am I going to have to worry about with this guy now? Is he going to totally freak out on me and, like, really screw this up? What am I going to have to do with this? So you don't know for sure what a guy like this is thinking, but you have to think that he's not, maybe, well, I know this sounds crazy, but I don't know if he's worried about the IRS more than he's worried about what Emmett's going to do from the fallout of the IRS following him.
No, that's a very good point.
So let's talk about this brutal scene. Wow. Just Nikki and Sai, of course, have this meeting at this parking lot 350, which, by the way, I don't know if there's any significance about the fact that it was parking lot 350. I did not see anything about anyone else talking about this, but, you know, so they have this negotiation, and, of course, Cy tries to lowball her down to like, what is it, 40 grand, I think I wrote. She's, of course, not budging.
Well, 40 grand because he figures you've already taken 10 from me.
Oh, yes, that's right.
Two. So he's like, oh, that's an easy 50.
Okay, yeah, that's right. And so, you know, again, like you've already mentioned, this was really his only tactic. Like, he thought, I will talk her, you know, to a number down, and then maybe she'll take the money, and then we'll be done with this problem, because that's his way of dealing with things. But then we've got VM's men who have a much more brutal way to deal with things. Yuri, of course, begins to describes what it's like, was like in Siberia, which, he describes of course, the millions of people that had died, the bloodshed, all the turmoils that happened over time when it comes to Mother Russia. As we all know, you know, lots of people had suffered and died from that. And then, of course, you know, as she, at this point, she's like, I'm out of here. But of course, they had other plans for her, beat the living hell out of her, behind her car, as poor Cy watches in horror. Like, you could just, all over his face, he is just mortified about everything. Now, it's one thing that they just up and leave her, but then he is so distraught, he can't even think about going over to see if she's okay. He just gets in his Hummer and leaves, and just leaves her there. But wow, that was, let's talk about this. Did you think she was a goner? I mean, I did.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Because I think one of the big questions is, why would they leave her alive? I mean, I think they would do it very purposely. These guys do not seem like they're sloppy enough that they would leave that corner untucked in a way. It could be a way to sort of send a message that, you know, she has a mouth. She'll go back and say, this is what they did. We can't mess with them anymore. I do wonder as well if they knew who she was. I'd assume so, because I know Emmett has talked to Varga a little bit about her, and Varga obviously has a lot of eyes everywhere. He's got a lot of little sparrows that are, you know, looking at everything that's going on with these characters. But it could also just be sort of like what happened with Maurice and Ennis Stussy, just sort of like a random happenstance that they pull up. They've been tailing Cy this entire episode.
Right.
They see that he's consorting with somebody, and they decide to beat that person to sort of send a message. Mm-hmm. I'm not entirely sure, but I'd have to assume that the reason why they didn't kill her was to have her send a message to whoever she was going back to, in this case, Ray.
Yeah, and a lot of these, I think a lot of this can really, all these scenarios kind of really work out. I mean, it's got to be something like that. I do wonder about how, do they know for sure who that was? But then I think back of what we saw, how much VM knows. Like, he spends a lot of time doing a lot of research. So I have a feeling that those guys were told exactly who that is that he was following. I have a feeling they really knew what was going on. So the purpose of beating her, because, you know, I know they brutally killed the poor lawyer and just threw him off. But I do think these are kind of people who won't necessarily kill unless they feel it necessary. So, like, this is definitely, of course, sending a huge message. But I do wonder, was the message more of to bring more... Do they want the brothers to be more at odds with each other? Because they got to know that if they keep Nikki alive, well, even if they killed her, either way, but by beating her up, whether she died or stayed alive, but either way, this is going to really, you would think, break and upset Ray now at another level that he isn't at, and just increase the conflict between these two, I would think, because I have a feeling that, you know, the next few episodes, like we've talked about already at the start of this episode of this podcast, that things are going to just start really heating up between these two, because this is not going to go over very well. And by the way, I love the determination of this woman, because we see her as the song Ship of Fools starts playing, and she crawls herself back into the truck and drives herself back home. As we see the side shot of Ray, of course, coming back from the police station, and gets herself back to their place and crawls to the bathroom. I mean, she's got a lot of determination. I don't know about you, but I think I'd be laying there for a long time.
Yeah, I mean, how does she drive there?
I have no idea. It does seem a little bit much that she was able to survive that kind of beating. I mean, she's kind of a frail gal. I mean, she's not like she's... big bone lady. I mean, she's very frail. I mean, I would think that being beaten that much would not go over well. I just can't imagine. But beside the point, she made it. She's a very determined person. So I it'll be interesting to see, is her emotions broken along with her body? I mean, but I think for Nick, for Ray, this new Ray especially, I think this new Ray is going to, he's going to want revenge for this.
And it's an interesting point that you brought up before with, is one reason why they kept Nicky alive was to put a wedge further between the two brothers, because it could be easily misconstrued, especially since Sai didn't help and didn't tell her, hey, these guys aren't with me, as saying, oh yeah, these, you know, Sai tried to pay me off and then these other two guys came in and ambushed me, which could then have Ray going after Emmett again. So I do agree that, especially maybe emboldened with this new attitude, Ray might really want to go for the jugular for Emmett now. I don't exactly know what that might mean, but now that blood has literally been drawn,
right,
everything's up in the air.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm thinking. So whether or not that was their intentions, it's hard to say, because, you know, I kind of at first would think that VM would rather this feud between the two of them just disbarred and go away, because in that way he can focus on with Emmett and running this business and making lots of liquid money and whatever term he likes to use it. So it just seems hard for me to believe that he would want these two to be even in more conflict, but maybe I'm wrong. Maybe, I don't know. Maybe eventually he wants Emmett completely out of the way, and what better way to do this than maybe let these two either kill each other or get to the point where, you know, things go so badly for him or something. You know what I mean? So it will be interesting to see how this plays out, because as the episode ends, we get this very eerie image of a wolf mask, you know, with the smoke and everything, which is really like kind of reminded me of something I would see on True Detective. But and obviously this kind of goes back to, you know, the whole Peter and the wolf thing, you know, obviously that we all know that VM is the wolf. And I had put the question about, you know, will someone fall like the Nicholas II, the Russian emperor, where him and his whole family were executed? Will that be the Stussy? Will the entire Stussy clan be executed by the end of this thing? And maybe it'll be in the hands of the wolf? I don't know. Very interesting imagery. I thought it was a nice little touch there. So we will see how this thing plays out. And we'll see what, you would assume eventually Glory and Winnie now are going to get themselves pretty deep into this and might even find themselves in some trouble here. We'll see how that plays out as well. Any closing thoughts, Mike?
We're just talking about Glory and Winnie for a second, because we only saw them for a couple scenes after they decided to team up at the end of the previous episode.
Right.
I mean, we saw Chief Mo say no to them. Should call him Chief No, how much he turns it down, but I think we got the requisite step in sort of the Fargo formula of, here's a cop, she has a theory that turns out to be the right theory, but the chief doesn't approve of it. I think now the next step for the two of them is for them to do their own sort of independent under the radar research. So I still think they're on the wolf's trail, so we can sort of put a pin on that. But it does seem like the more urgent matter, as you spoke about, is what's going on with this other central core of characters, especially since Nikki's beating really rocks the world, and it'll be really interesting to see what the fallout is from all ends of that event.
Yeah, it will be very interesting to see, but I'm excited about it. You know, I want to see more Carrie Coon on my television. I mean, can I get enough of her? We mentioned this before, you know, our beloved The Leftovers, Mike, only have a few more episodes, so this show will outlast that one by quite a few episodes. So you know, we'll still have her. We'll still have her to watch for a little bit longer, which is great. I did forget, by the way, we did have one other question by Brendan Fitzpatrick. Wanted to know if we immediately started thinking of creative ways that the poor IRS guy was gonna get it. I wouldn't be surprised to see, though, they might have to remove him from the picture. And I have to admit, as soon as I saw him get involved, I thought, oh, this is not going to be good for him. So Brendan, you weren't alone. I was thinking, boy, this could go poorly for this guy. He might be in the wrong place at the wrong time, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm trying to think. I'm at a loss for any sort of like creative way he'll die, just because we don't exactly know who he is. I mean, he seemed to have a really plagued existence as it was, considering that he talked about that story where one time, I guess he was auditing a novelty shop. So he spent 3 months holed up in like the back room of a warehouse with all this like fake vomit all around him.
That's right.
Maybe a couple of mugs filled with fake pee as well. So it's something that he's used to. But it'll be interesting to see how he sort of, it seems like, you know, he said, I'm going to be here. I'll try to be out of the way. But considering how much there is sort of a sneakiness to what's going on with Varga within the office itself, considering that locked door, as you mentioned before, it'll be interesting to see if this agent himself is going to sniff on the trail possibly and what's going to happen to him as a result.
Yeah, exactly. So we'll see how it goes. And also, too, you mentioned about the vomit thing. I can't help but think, of course, of being with the vomit, obviously, with the bulimic thing. So interesting. Yeah, we'll see how this thing plays out. But don't feel bad. You know, I know Brendan Fitzpatrick, he gets worried that, you know, he's going to a dark place quickly. But I think on a show like this, it's okay to do that because where else are you going to go? You have to go dark. You have to assume that when a new character is introduced at some point, especially in a midway point of a season, that, you know, if you see this person again, they're probably going to be a goner. It's just not going to go well for them, you would think. So we'll see what happens to him for sure. Oh, a little quick fun more, a little nugget. I did find out that the version of Ship of Fools there at the end was performed by the composer Jeff Russo, which, by the way, I cannot say enough praises for his work here with Fargo, especially the first volume there for this first season was so brilliant. And the second one's good as well, but it kind of more plays off of the first season, of course. But there is some nice gems as well. And all these things, of course, I know are available on lots of different medias out there. I, of course, use it and listen to it on Apple Music. But it's really good stuff if you are a fan of his work. And I love what he's doing with it. But the vocals, by the way, that you're hearing was none other than himself, Noah Hawley, doing the vocals for Ship Fools there at the end of the episode. So I thought that was a little fun nugget I would throw in there that I had learned late in the game. But solid episode, Mike. Like you said, it was more of a setup for us. I think things are going to heat up really, really nicely here, and I'm excited for us to see how this turns out.
Yeah, absolutely. We're halfway through the season, which is crazy, but I think if we're marking this as the act one finale into our intermission before we start act two of Fargo, I think it's a really exciting moment to end on, to see exactly what the fallout of all of this is. And we'll see if the Lopez-Burgle combination is going to get closer and closer to the capital T truth.
Yeah, I think it will. And it's going to lead to something pretty exciting, I'm hoping for. So it's going to be good stuff, Mike. And I'm looking forward to breaking it down. Should we go ahead and let everybody know how they can get a hold of us and how they can help out here at the Jay and Jack Network? Because we got a lot of great things going on here on this network, and we'd love for you guys to not only listen to all of the stuff that is here on the Jay and Jack Network, but also there's many ways, too, you can help support the Jay and Jack Network and keep things going. So, Mike, let's start off by how they can get a hold of us.
Sure. So you can find us on Twitter. Jeremiah is at Jay Panhorst. I am at A Mike Bloom Type. We are receptive to answering any and all questions or any theories you may have. If you have any long-term theories that might not fit in 140 characters, you can always email us at fargowithmj@gmail.com. Again, that's fargowithmj@gmail.com. And if you send us theories after you watch the episode before we record, just like Mr. Fitzpatrick, we will talk about them on air. So that's one benefit to reaching out to us. As always, if you are not yet, please subscribe to our Fargo with Jeremiah and Mike feed. Just search Fargo with Jeremiah plus Mike on iTunes. While you're there, we're always appreciative of any reviews and ratings you may leave. We're very thankful for all the feedback and kind words that we've received so far. If you're not subscribed to all the other Jay and Jack shows, do that as well. As Jeremiah said, a lot of great content out there. The Leftovers, as we just mentioned, is finishing up in its final few episodes. I have no idea where it's going, but that makes me so, so excited. So I'm doing that with Jay and Jack. We've got The Broadcast. We've got Survivor. We've got The Married Man Show. There's a slew of things to check out on the Jay and Jack moment, Jay and Jack Network. You'll have everything in a moment's notice to listen to. And yeah, I'm excited to get back into this next week with you, Jeremiah, as we tackle the latter half of Fargo Season 3.
It's going to be great. It's going to be great. Yeah, it's going to be hopefully, I have a feeling there's going to be lots of bloodshed coming up here in the next few episodes. So that's what I'm looking forward to. That's what you expect to eventually happen here with this particular show. So, Mike, This has been fun, and until next week, my man, we will talk then, and hopefully no one has to destroy their favorite coffee mug because it's been tampered with, shall we say.
Here's hoping.
Yeah, here's hoping. All right, Mike, you take care, buddy.